Lovely cushion header. But Gerrard!
Hello, Internet. Welcome to the LFC Podcasting Couch. This is episode 76. As you can tell, I'm actually going to be recording this one on video again, as well as doing audio. So if you are on YouTube, please find us, LFC Podcasting Couch. Check out the videos. I'm going to be doing all kinds of different stuff, as well as putting these podcasts on the video as well. So I might do some video content while we're talking to people. Anyway, today it's an early morning one. That's why I'm dressed in my suit, ready to go to work, just so I'm not late for work. I do have a day job, people. So anyway, this is going to be a Brown Boys pod. So we have a guy, Grizz Khan, and we have Nadzi. I'm going to call him up right now on Skype. So as you can see, I'm going to hit that play button. Look at that face. Gorgeous. There's beards everywhere. Dear God. Anyway, we'll see how this one goes. Pick up, pick up, pick up. And they'll be able to see my face too. So that's always interesting.
Hello.
Hey, Nadzi. What's going on, brother?
How you doing?
Hey.
All right, how are you?
Hey, Grizz. Hey. You made it too. Grizzy.
Yeah, just in time, mate. Just in time.
Just in time. Now, I just want to make sure.
What's the video call?
Hey, say it again.
What's with the video call?
Well, I'm going to be doing these podcasts as video recordings as well. So, yeah, if you want.
You off to a wedding, Nish?
I'm off to work. This is my day job.
Okay.
I know, sadly. How are you boys doing?
That's right. Yeah, Nads is dressed like that at the moment in West Brom. It's midnight, but he's still sitting there with his suit and glasses on.
that's when Nads is at his finest, is when he's heading out at midnight in a suit.
Absolutely. Yeah. He comes alive in the nighttime.
Yeah. Anyway.
That's your nickname, Red Light Grizz.
Red Light Grizz.
If you boys want to turn on your video camera for any particular reason, unless you haven't eaten enough yet, Grizzy, and you need to go to the bathroom, you good?
No, I've done the bathroom, I think. I've just got my glass of milk and some finest Italian biscuits right here.
Awesome.
But you won't notice me eating them.
Come on, man.
I won't disturb you guys.
Come on, man. Look at that beard, though.
No, come on, man.
Is that beard still... I'm just kind of running my
It's more as Nads aptly named me today, it's more like Bungle now.
Can't you sure you don't want to
rainbow?
Rather than groomed nicely, it's more like Bungle now. but thanks to Nads, he's motivated me to go to the barber tomorrow, so I'll get it sorted before the game. Because we're actually going to the game Sunday.
That's awesome. So you actually got tickets? I know you guys were looking for them. Oh, I'm so happy for you boys. Cool. I know it's touch and go there for a bit, so that's really, really exciting. But let's jump into what's just happened, because we haven't actually talked about Watford yet on the podcast. Not Watford. Jesus, West Ham. I hope we talked about Watford. That was a bit of way ago. So it was phenomenal, as we knew, before the game started. You're eating right now, aren't you, Grizz?
Nope. I'll put it right down.
I could hear the lips smacking against
really?
Each other.
Okay, mute. Go on. Shit. Okay, mute.
Okay. Yeah,
but you're not recording yet anyway.
I am recording.
No, you're fucking.
Oh, yes, I am.
Oh, why'd you do these ones?
It is, pal. Right. That's why he said he's doing it via these Skype video calls now. But you're too busy stuffing your face, Bungle.
All right, it's been a hard day, man. Glass of milk and a biscuit. Bloody hell. It's like this one.
Your hard day has consisted of 1,000 tweets, 1,000 asks for tickets, and 1,000 messages to me on WhatsApp. That's how hard your day's been.
Someone's got to do it. But listen, I've got the same routine. I used to come home from school, have a glass of milk and a biscuit, right? 30 years later, I should say, I'm still doing the same routine. I've come home, I'm having a glass of milk and a biscuit.
Beautiful.
Leave me alone. He's such a bully, this man. Do you know that?
To a packet of biscuits. That's what it's
gone
for.
Don't let these glasses fool you, Nish. He's a bully, you know. He's an absolute. He's been bullying me on WhatsApp biscuit. All day long.
Biscuit Bungle. I'm not bullying you. I'm giving you a dose of reality. I'm toughening you up for the real world. That's what I'm doing.
All right. Let's talk football.
Okay. Feel free to mute and have a bit of a nibble. Don't worry, mate. It's all good.
Cool.
Yeah. Listen, so I am just going to kick someone off Skype. Cool. So don't bother us. So, what a game. I think main high talking points were that we knew that Coutinho is an absolute boss back in what I guess is his natural position. Sturridge reminded fans how much of a boss he is and gave us a reason to maybe want him to stay next year, even though I think most of the fan base thought he was going to go. Maybe now there's a chance he will stay. We can discuss if there really is one. And I guess the main thing is it gave the fans a bit of a incentive to actually be happy for the first fucking time for next week's game against Middlesbrough. Who wants to kick it off? Who's got some thoughts? I know Grizz has got loads of thoughts.
Go on, Nads.
Okay, Nadsy. Go on, Nads. You're on.
So just to touch upon what you said, Nish. So Coutinho in that number eight position, I think, has given us a bit of an insight as to where Klopp may see him going into next season. Yeah. And that may also dictate in terms of his recruitment, in terms of his plan, because I think if you look at David Silva, for example, you look at, obviously, Iniesta, as he's done the job at Barcelona, whereby they can see the picture better than anyone else in that position. And I think the comments that people have made, certainly over the last few months, is our inability to move the ball quicker and faster in terms of the forward exchange. With Coutinho, you have someone that is fast-thinking, he sees that picture, and he has the ability to pick out a pass, as he did, and also spot the runner. You know, who else could have made that pass to Sturridge on Sunday? You know, they talked about it in commentary around the fact that another player, or certainly 9 out of 10 other players on the pitch, would have passed it to Lallana. Whereas Coutinho saw that opportunity, saw that little window of opportunity, and fed through a perfectly weighted ball, and going through to someone, you know, in terms of Sturridge, who's our best finisher, and I've said that from the time that he signed, that there was only going to be one outcome in terms of him scoring. Going back to what you said about Sturridge in terms of, you know, I've always said that my concern with Sturridge is not his ability. I've always rated him. Even when we signed him, I was delighted that we signed him. My one concern with him was at the time that we bought him, and it's still a concern, is the fact that he doesn't play or can't play enough games. You know, when he plays, he's unplayable, but it's how often is he going to play? And I mentioned to Grizz and I mentioned to Cam yesterday in terms of what we could do in terms of managing his fitness. Was he to stay? And I had a comment that I mentioned, was that for him, like the likes of Paul McGrath going back a number of years, or Ledley King, when people have that kind of muscle issue or a knee problem, and with Sturridge, it's also a genetic issue because his uncle and his cousin had the same sort of muscular issues throughout their career. And I think if you're going to manage that, then it's key that you manage that going forward properly. And as I said to the boys yesterday, I believe Klopp is going to recruit André Schulenberger, who I mentioned was the club doctor at Dortmund, who then went to Bayern Munich. And I feel that the one thing that you can take in terms of the camaraderie from the result on Sunday would be that if he's tailoring a specific training program for Sturridge in terms of managing his fitness and to manage him playing X amount of games next season, then he may well stay, because some of the fans have said, well, he's on £150,000 a week, he's on, you know, £7-9 million a year. It's actually irrelevant, because if Sturridge helps us obtain Champions League football, the payoff from that is worth far more than any kind of wages you would pay someone like that.
Yeah.
And you do not want your best players going if they have the opportunity to offer something to the team. And if it's something that can be addressed with regards to his fitness and something that a new club doctor can actually spot and tailor a program to him, then I'm all for him staying, as long as that's the case, that we can manage his fitness better.
Yeah, definitely. And it's, as some people have pointed out rightly, I'm just going scrolling through Twitter as we speak. I think it was Andrew Beasley once again, base change of red. Sturridge's been available as often as some key players and contributed to goals about as often too. Do we get rid of, or do we keep Sturridge? Quick question, I guess, to both of you. Would you keep Sturridge? I think it's easy what Nads has said.
Go on, Grizz.
It's funny, actually, because, you know, I let Nads go and Nads just sort of smashed a home run. You know, because we discussed this, didn't we, yesterday? this very point with regards to Sturridge, and it's funny because is it the Anfield Rap done a poll which consisted of like nearly, I think they got about 6,000 votes, and this was done in February, where the votes were 70% said yes to selling Sturridge, and they done the poll again yesterday or the day before. and the swing was amazing. It's actually 70% saying yes now. You know, just because of that one goal or maybe that performance.
The one performance, yeah.
So, you know, yeah, so it's difficult. With Sturridge, it's a difficult. I'm totally with Nads, where we cannot, and anyone with sort of any ounce of any football knowledge cannot doubt his ability.
Yeah.
His ability is not in question. What I will add, you know, there's nothing to add to what Nads has already said. There's nothing to say. I agree with that, so I don't want to bore the listeners or whatever to repeat that. But what I will say is it's up to Sturridge, I think. I think the decision, Klopp will put the decision to Sturridge because, in my opinion, he still won't be our number one striker.
Mm.
And Sturridge is a confidence player. He, whatever we say about him, he likes to feel he is the main man. You know, there was... I'm not the best of lip readers, but there was one stage where I'm confident that I saw Klopp saying, "See, you are the man." Right, yeah. He actually said that to him, yeah? So I'm not sure if Klopp can convince him to stay and play a bit part role, because whether it's through injury or whether it's through rotation, he will be a bit part player, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Sturridge is fantastic. When he's like that, I think only Aguero maybe is sort of more lethal than him, you know, in the Premier League, because he is lethal. So it's a very, 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 it's a very delicate situation we find ourselves in. If he can, as Nads alluded to, if sort of this doctor comes in and we can sort of set up a plan like a Ledley King type where he doesn't train, he just sort of just bees match fit for the actual game.
Yeah.
Then all well and good. With the Champions League, you know, he can definitely help us. Another thing that would or could play a part is what role and position he plays. Because if Klopp plays the formation he plays yesterday, a lot of questions open up. Where does Firmino fit in that formation?
Yeah.
Does he play Firmino and Sturridge up front?
Yeah.
You know, or does he play... Because Firmino and Origi is a different type of striker. You know, so there's a lot of questions. It's intriguing. It has made it intriguing. Where it was done deal, Sturridge is off. I think, you know, there's a lot of discussions to be had. And I think it's 50-50, I'd say.
Definitely. I do want to throw one thing past you. There was one thing, sitting back and going for long walks as I do, that's my kind of meditation time, and thinking about the game. I was thinking on the point of, if I was a world-class football player who was thinking about which club do I want to choose, what club do I want to jump into, and if I was a striker and I had Chelsea after me and I saw Diego Costa, and Diego Costa says, "I'm not going to China, I'm actually going to stay," you'd probably go, "Holy shit, that's going to be quite the battle to dislodge Diego Costa out of that side. He's been there for a long time. Ibra's probably out, so don't worry about Manchester United." You think about Spurs with Harry Kane. You think about Arsenal constantly rotating the players. When I thought about the Liverpool team, and I thought about pretty much every single position bar Minelay, because he's doing so well. Sorry if you hear my cat whinging in the background, by the way. My cat's losing its mind this morning. it's just... We're not, except for Minelay, because right now I don't think Klopp will change him at all. I couldn't think of a single position on that field where a world-class player would go, "No, I don't think I could dislodge that person." You could think about centre-back with Virgil van Dijk. You could think about left-back. You could think about right-back. You could think about defensive midfielder with Emre Can. Maybe that one's more solidified, but even he gets rotated around a lot. Left central mid, right central mid, attacking mid, well, central mid again with Coutinho is probably another sticky one. But then the two strikers as well. I think that's a good thing for us as fans, because coming up to the transfer window, it means we could get literally anybody in those positions. But do you guys feel the same way, that anyone watching that game probably wouldn't feel worried that they wouldn't be able to get game time under Klopp?
Well,
go on, Chris.
Well, basically, what you're saying in effect is what most, unless you're an absolute rose-tinted Liverpool super fan, would allude to, in which is that, you know, every player in our team is, you know, we can upgrade. You know, we can upgrade. That's what you're basically saying. We can upgrade in every single position.
Yep.
Which is testimony to how well Klopp has done.
Yeah.
If you think about it, you know, you're right. That we have got some, even though we're ardent Liverpool lovers, we have got some average players. And there's no getting away from that. You know, Nathaniel Clyne, you know, he's one of the players where I think he's okay, but he hasn't improved. I asked a question yesterday, which players have not improved under Klopp? And, you know, there's a few that, you know, Origi, Nathaniel Clyne, you know, I don't think, Matip hasn't, I don't think these players, they're playing at their level, they've always played. I don't think they've improved. And you're right, any world-class player that we'd be linked with in any position, you know, whether it be right back, left back, as you said, yep, they would feel confident of sort of securing a place in our team. You're right, you're absolutely right. Is that a good thing? I don't know. I don't know if that's a good thing. But I do think, I don't go for walks. I go for drives. You go for walks when you think. I go for drives, okay? Because nice. I'm a lazy fat shit. All right? So I'll go for drives. And I was thinking, I think, Nads, we touched on this yesterday in our WhatsApp conversation, that if we have a choice of like sort of this war chest, so to speak, for let's just say 150, 160 million, right? Give or take, you know, 20, 30 million, right? We're talking, forget the net spend, just 150, 60 million on players. Now, if we spent that on three or four 40 million players, let's say four 40 million players, like absolute superstars that you can get for 40 million.
Yeah.
I'd be happy with that, Nish.
Yeah.
I'd be absolutely happy with if we got a left back, a centre mid, and a wide forward stroke forward. Those four positions, if we got four first teamers nailed on, we're talking nailed on first teamers. I'm not talking squad possible, or he could possibly replace him. I'm talking the likes of Naby Keita, who would walk into that team.
Yep.
Virgil van Dijk, who would walk into that team. Yep. You know, we're talking Douglas Costa, who would walk into that left if Coutinho Sol plays left. If we get four players, any left back, you know, sort of any reputable left back that walks into that team, if we get four players who displace the current four, that gives us a nice, decent squad to work with. What do you think, guys?
Definitely. Nads, I'll take you because I haven't spoken for a while.
So I think, Chris said he doesn't think it's necessarily a good thing. I'm of the opposite. I think it's a massive positive. And the reason why I say that is because, and I wrote a couple of things before and tweeted about it previously around, I think we need 4 to 6 signings, you know, in terms of coming in this summer, maybe up to 8, and I think of which 4 should be guaranteed starters. The position that Grizz has alluded to, names that I've mentioned on previous podcasts and that I've tweeted about as well, I feel that any player that as you said, is an upgrade on what we currently have, doesn't necessarily have to be a world-class talent, but has the ability and the world-class potential, like a Naby Keita. Naby Keita I've watched a lot of, and I think he's not a world-class player, but he has that potential under Klopp to be a genuine superstar in that position. You know, he's played in a team that has overachieved in RB Leipzig, and I think for him to come into our team, like Grizz said, he walks into the team, and for a player to kind of have that confidence to come in and say, do you know what? The other players that are there already that we're not going to sell, that aren't surplus to requirements, will look at this and say, do you know what? This guy's come in. I need to step up my level again.
Yeah.
You know, I need to make sure that I can force myself. Like an Emre Can might come in and say, do you know what? I'm still quite young. I've done well of late, but I'm not guaranteed. When you have players that are guaranteed to start, the issue that I have, and he mentioned and he alluded to Nathaniel Clyne, is that level of complacency. What I would have liked to have seen was, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold play a few games at right back to not put the wind up of Clyne, but certainly give him something to think about. Because Clyne, as an option, as a defender, I think is a consistent player. But how often have you seen him beat a man down the right-hand side and put in a cross that someone could put away? It's a rare thing that you've seen in terms of that final third. How often, and I love James Milner as a professional, I think he's done a job that is not a left back, and people have said, well, he's done this, he's done that. For a guy that doesn't play left back, he hasn't let us down at all in terms of the vast majority of games he's played. Has he shot the stars, you know, or done anything superb apart from putting the penalties away? No, but then again, if you buy a left back, say, of a Jonas Hector type quality or a Rodriguez, and you've got someone that actually adds another dimension to our forward play. And also, it's better defensively because they're used to playing in that position.
Yeah.
He's a midfielder, straight winger. And people have said, well, he got turned on the outside and he got turned on the inside. Yes, it's not a great thing that happens. But also, at the back of your mind, you also think, well, this is a guy that actually isn't a left back anyway.
Hmm.
And when you've got a left back on the bench in Moreno that going forward offers more than he does defensively, then maybe Moreno needs to tailor his game to become a left winger. If he wants to stay at the club, to have the option of being an attacking player.
Yeah.
You know, because he's got pace in abundance. He can clearly ping a ball in. So maybe develop his game, and then that's something for Klopp to think about. Say, do you know what? Of the players that are going to go, and I think at least four or five will move on in terms of bringing in 50 to 60 million, including obviously, I think Sacco's going to go, and I think Markovic will go. You know, I think Kevin Stewart will go. I think Brannigan will probably go. And I think a few other players on the periphery will go. The likes of Trent and the likes of Brewster and the likes of Woodburn will get minutes next season. Ings coming back in from a long-term injury. People say it's like a new signing. It's only like a new signing if the player actually plays games.
Yeah.
You know, you can't define someone as saying they're a new signing because he hasn't played games. He needs to be fit to play. So I think the summer is going to offer great opportunities in terms of recruitment, but also for the current squad to kind of have a kick up their backside and think, do you know what? As both of you guys have said, none of us is guaranteed to start.
No, definitely. What I did find quite startling about, well, not startling, but quite obvious about the West Ham game, and I don't want to bring up our opposition too much, but we still have to give them credit. The Manchester United teams of all the noughties, the 90s and the noughties, where they won the 13 titles like crap. The thing they did the best was that every single player in that team had a very simple job. They had a very simple role. They knew everyone knew what kind of role they had to do, and they didn't overextend that role. Such as, you know how Emre Can in the early part of the year, he wasn't quite working because we weren't sure if he was supposed to be defending or if he was supposed to be attacking. And when he would attack, there was a gap and people weren't sure what they're supposed to be doing. In that West Ham game, everyone had a super simple role. Wijnaldum did very little work. Lallana, he was running, but he wasn't running as much as he had to. He wasn't bursting everywhere in such a point that he had to do five different roles. Coutinho is probably the only one had a bit more of a loose role because he hung back quite a lot. He played quite centrally, but then his job was to link the midfield with the attack. Emre Can, again, he didn't have to do much. He sat back and he bossed that midfield. And the two centre-backs, we all know, Milner and Klein, again, didn't overextend. That's amazing because that means we finally have a system which you can simply take out one of those players, put another player in, especially when we're playing in three cups or whatever next season. You can take out one player, put another player in and say, this is your role. It's quite simple. Just do that role correctly and you'll fit in with our Liverpool system and we will win the game. Simple as that. So the only ones...
I think that's a very good point, Nish. I think what you've just said is exactly how the Dortmund team played under Klopp, with Gundogan had a similar, had a set role. Subotic had a set role. Hummels had a set role.
Yep.
Royce had a set role. They all had roles defined within the team. You know, Mario Götze, before he went to Bayern Munich, had a set role. You know, maybe a floating role at times, but you're right in saying that keep it simple, keep it clean and tidy, keep it compact, and make sure that the role that you're there to govern to do, you don't, like as you said, you don't overcomplicate that by trying to play three or four roles within one game. It doesn't make any sense then.
Yeah, definitely.
See, but I just want to take you up on that, guys.
Go for it.
If you're saying... No, but I'm just saying, if you're saying that this is... Are you assuming, Nish and Nads, that this is the formation that we think he will take into the next season?
No.
Because what I... No or yes?
No, I think it was just the style of play that we did.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Well, see, in that case, there's a lot of criticism, and I'm a Klopp fan, you know, before I get hate, okay? I am not anti-Klopp. But the one criticism you could levy at him is there was too much banking on one system, because the moment Mane was removed from that system, there was an able deputy that made the team, the flow as it was with Mane in it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people said that there should be a flexibility in our system for that not to happen. One player missing from a formation tactically shouldn't ruin the game, the rest of the game plan for Liverpool.
Yeah.
And that did take place. Yesterday's formation I mean, a lot of people were saying diamond. It's actually a good conversation. We probably could have a whole pod on sort of, did we play the diamond yesterday? I mean, I sort of just done a tongue-in-cheek tweet, like, I don't think it was a diamond. You know, fight me. You know, I think it was a box in midfield, right? Because I actually think it was. And Nads mentioned the Gundogan position. That is, in my opinion, that is what Coutinho took up yesterday alongside a Bender, you know, who sort of just held in midfield. You know, I thought Coutinho played centrally parallel with Emre. And then I think Lallana and Gini were the runners used ahead of them.
Mm.
So I think actually it was a four-four-two, but sort of a box in midfield as opposed to a diamond. I didn't think Coutinho played at the tip of the diamond just behind Sturridge and Origi, like a lot of people said. I mean, just in my opinion, maybe I've been wrong, but I didn't think it was that. I think Coutinho's starting point was far deeper. Now, I think we have got the personnel going forward to play that next season, including some of the players we're looking to get. But where does Mane fit into that system, guys? That is my question to you guys. If this is this formation that we think it could possibly go into next season, because it does work, because it enables Coutinho to come in and have this sort of central view of everything, and there's no one with a better range, a better vision or skill to play a through ball than Coutinho.
Yeah.
That's fine. But where does that leave Sadio Mane, who, in my opinion, is an out-and-out winger? Who do we sacrifice? Do we sacrifice the pressing and the off-the-ball runs of Lallana and Gini to get Mane in? Or do we say, okay, Mane could play alongside a Sturridge or a Firmino through the centre like he did many times for Southampton?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm actually quite excited with this sort of slight adjustment that he's made with Coutinho. Another criticism would be, why now? Why did he wait for the penultimate game of the season, or, you know, near the end, sorry. Why did he wait all this time for Coutinho to come into the middle? So, you know, there's a few questions still. I don't think it's, you know, it's set in sand, and I don't think, it's as sort of clear-cut that we're going to do this, but there is a few questions still to be, problems to be solved for next season.
Definitely. I think Mane will be just as comfortable through the middle as he would be on the wing. I think in a 4-3-3, he is best because he can exploit the wingers and it can help spread the defense. But through the middle, the thing that really made Sturridge shine, now let's not take away, I can't stand Origi at the moment, so I'm going to caveat with that. However, Sturridge would not have had that game if Origi was not there. Because, the main point, Sturridge's first goal, the only reason he was onside was because the right back was tracking Origi and wasn't paying attention to Sturridge. If Sturridge was alone, he would have had three big centre backs on his ass the entire game, and he would have had a quiet game, and people would have said, sell him. If Origi was by himself, he would have had another quiet game because he had all the defenders on him and he just isn't in form at the moment. But because both of them finally are playing together, there was space opened up and Coutinho has the ability to find that through ball and find that play. I think Mane and Sturridge, or Firmino and Mane, any combination of that, playing a similar style where they're simply stretching the defense to such a point gaps are opening up for a through ball to go through, either of those guys would burst onto it and score a goal. I've got no problems at all thinking that. Nadzi, what do you think?
So I don't think we can be confined to one formation, whether he goes with a box, as you've mentioned, whether he changes that and tweaks it to a diamond, whether he plays a 4-3-3, whether he plays a 4-1-2-1-2. I don't think it matters in terms of the interchangeability is such that Mane played as a striker for Southampton. He played as a winger for Southampton. He played as a number 10 behind a striker, you know, when he was behind Graziano Pelle. So I don't think it matters. I think you're right in saying that Mane and his flexibility is the reason why Klopp signed him. Because as you mentioned, in terms of keeping it simple, if he tells Mane he's playing in the position, Mane has a football intelligence, which means that the runs that you mentioned, Mane can make. Absolutely. The runs that you mentioned with Firmino, he can also make. So in terms of the forward line is not the concern in terms of going forward into next season. The things that we need to address as a priority, and we've all said this before, is let's address the defensive positions first and clearly establish what we need. And we know that we need a centre-back or two. We know that we need a left-back. We know that we need a defensive midfielder stroke a central midfielder. In terms of the forward line, let's see how that lay of the land goes with regards to what happens with Sturridge in terms of does he want to bring in a striker that is more target-based, or does he want to bring someone in that is outwardly mobile? Because, for example, with Klopp, and Grizz is right in terms of, I'm a huge fan of Klopp, probably the biggest fan on Twitter, because I've watched his work, as I mentioned, I've alluded to, since he was at Mainz. So if people want to pick holes in what Klopp has done,
yeah,
then I challenge any of them to kind of come to me and say, what has Klopp done? Because I can tell them his blueprint from day one.
Yeah.
But the fact remains is that he's not above criticism, and he said that himself. I think what happened last season is that he overestimated the ability and the quality of the squad, in which case he meant that when he went into summer and he got the recruitment, that got the players that he did, we didn't get certain players that would have made a big difference. And people say that the January window for me is a waste of time in many respects. And I've said this on previous podcasts in terms of the availability, in terms of getting players in. The issue that we had maybe in terms of loaning players out was that when Mane was out for the AFCON, we didn't have someone to come in on that position to play that role. And because of injuries and everything else, we were left somewhat short in terms of breaking teams down and getting the goals that we needed to get. And also, because of the failings we had defensively, it meant that we were drawing games that we should have been winning, or we were losing to teams that we should have been putting away. And we were enjoying the majority of the possession. We just had a very...
But will you admit in that January, when Mane did go off, there could have been more tactical... He could have been adapted more tactically. He could have changed the team like he has now.
I just said that he could have changed things. I just alluded to that. Yeah. He could have changed going back and saying if, what's and maybes is all irrelevant, Grizz, because to say that he changed it just now, it doesn't make any difference. The fact remains that going into Sunday's game, which we are going to win, we can still get top four. And that was the objective at the start of the season. So it's okay going over summer and going through a post-mortem of the season, but the time to do that isn't now. The time now is to focus on Sunday, win that game, and then the lay of the land will be that Klopp already knows what he's going to do going into next season. He knows that he's made mistakes. Every manager makes them.
Yeah.
The fact remains that it's a case of addressing those mistakes going into the next season. What's done is done. We can't change that. You know, every single team in that top six has had problems, whether it be drawing too many games, having too many injuries, tactical naivety. Even Chelsea haven't, you know, delivered in certain games. Just so it happens that other teams haven't stepped up. And for us, at the start of the season, I said we have the sixth best team on paper. But the fact that we don't have European football means that, and I predicted back in June, we would finish top four. You know, that's the objective. Winning trophies is a fundamental thing. But in terms of Klopp's plan, for me, it was a case of assess the team the first season that he was there, or three quarters of the season. This season was establishing some of the team and trying to obtain top four, which hopefully, you know, we will do. I'm very confident going into Sunday that we are going to do. And then everything's going, you know, to plan in terms of his blueprint. And then for next season, it's a case of, you know, as you mentioned, buying some quality signings, tweaking some of the tactics, having a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, a plan D, and then going and trying to compete on all levels in terms of all the competitions we're in.
Oh, you better hope we win on Wednesday, you know, Sunday. You know, we've got a few things. Nish, we've got a few things planned for him if it doesn't work, because he's been sort of cheerleader on WhatsApp, you know, oh, we've done it.
Yeah, and I said, okay, no problem. But I'm positive and I'm also a realist. You guys on WhatsApp have said we're going to lose to West Ham, so you guys can all get fucked anyway.
Yeah, no, I didn't.
You said we're going to lose to West Ham. Every single one of you said we're going to lose to West Ham.
Screenshot that WhatsApp where I said it. Screenshot it. Go on, I tell you. No, I'd never say that. I said it would be a tough... I said that's the game that clinches it for us. If we win at West Ham, then that's the one. And lo and behold,
that's
you know...
Yeah, you said if we win, I told you we were going to win. Nish said we were going to win 5-0, and we won 4-0. You just need to be more positive, buddy.
No problem. I'm just saying we better win, because those things we've all planned for you, we'll go ahead.
Oh, dear. You got nothing planned. You got all bluster, no muster. Nothing's going to happen to me.
So good.
Bring on Sunday.
Definitely. Sunday, in case you guys don't know, especially those who are in Australia, and especially if you're in Sydney, It's just been announced that we're going to have legends coming down. I can't remember on the top of my head. I think it's Schmitzer. I think it's Craig Johnston. I can't remember the last one. But anyway, they're going to be at Cheers Bar in Sydney for the game in the actual venue. So get down to Cheers Bar nice and early. Doors open, I think, around 8 p.m. Kickoff is midnight, so get in there really early. There are going to be some things, some giveaways, all that kind of good stuff. So make sure you're there. It's going to be a bouncing night, and if we lose, I'm not sure what we'll do, but I'm pretty confident we're going to win at least 3-0. Can I get a quick prediction for the game, actually? Score prediction? We'll start with you, Grizz.
Predictions are just, you know, predictions, aren't they? I just want those. I want to be winning with 15, 20 minutes to go, like 2-3-0, comfortable, so we can sort of, you know, I want to lead a Congo. I really do. I want to lead a Congo on that. I'm thinking of, you know, streaking on that pitch, man, with sort of nads. I love nads on my forehead. You know? I want to be in a position.
No,
I want to be in a position
no one needs
where
to
you
see
know,
that.
Your nads is nads on your forehead.
Position, I want. Yeah. I want to be in a position where I can do that. Look, the one of the brilliant things of the West Ham. And was the manner of the victory.
Yeah.
What's happened is recently we've gone away from home and we've got the job done. And then we've expected to blitz teams at home. So the mood of the home, so the home support, the home crowd, the Anfield crowd has been subdued recently. But what's uplifted the mood amongst, look at us, and sort of just generally the fan base, is the manner of the victory at West Ham, which was very crucial. We didn't just get away with a wonder goal and then just cling on like we have been, and it hasn't been scrappy. We were the Liverpool under Klopp that we all come to love.
Yeah.
The energy, the vigour, the relentless pressing, the relentless attacking was back, and we were sort of just efficient. We could have scored 7-8, yeah. You know, let's be honest. We could have scored 7-8. So that's lifted the mood. I'm hoping that mood takes us into Anfield on Sunday, because it will. The crowd will play a very, very vital role, and it's got to be bouncing. And that's why I'm hoping that this victory against West Ham has sort of just lifted everyone's moods, including the players. There's that sort of air of confidence back, whereas recently our home performances have been sort of lackluster. You know, we've been sort of, you know, quite subdued. So I'm going for, after all that, a 1-0 victory. No, I'm joking.
1-0.
I'm joking. 3-0. I'm going for 3-0.
Nice. So, Nancy, what are you thinking?
So I said this last week, even before we played West Ham. And West Ham, I thought we'd win narrowly 2-1, and obviously we blew them away. But for Middlesbrough, I've said that we're going to beat them 4-0. And I think, you know, in terms of the confidence and everything else, I think when you're backed into a corner, it says a lot about not just your manager, but it says a lot about you as a person. When by, if you have control over your own destiny in terms of knowing that only one result will do and one result will matter, then you just have to go out there and deliver in terms of your own ability and have confidence in doing so. And I think we'll get an early goal. You know, I don't buy into this that teams have nothing to play for. People have personal pride.
Yeah.
And if you have personal pride in, you know, and also what people also need to remember is that this is Middlesbrough's last game in the Premier League. They don't want to roll over and die. We need to basically just go in there and throttle them from minute one. And in doing so, I think we'll get an early goal. You know, I think half-time will probably be 2-0, and I think we'll get two late goals, and I think we'll run out 4-0 winners,
yeah.
Possibly even 5-0.
Oof, 5-0. So speaking of 5-0 then, knowing that we played so well that game and what I just mentioned about Origi being on the last man and spraying the fence, all that kind of stuff, even if Firmino is fit to play 90 minutes, would you start him? Or would you change the formation or lineup at all?
The only change that I would make is that I would swap out Origi for Firmino on the basis that Firmino adds that X factor, which means that at any given time or any given point in a game, and he's shown this against Stoke, he's shown this against other teams, that he doesn't just score simple tap-ins. He has the ability from 35 yards to ping one into the top corner,
yeah,
and your gif will start banging left, right and centre like a porn star all over Twitter. So in that respect, I think if you know, if Firmino is fit to play 90 minutes, he has to start.
Okay.
And I think come 60, 65 minutes, if you know, he should then be swapped out for Origi and give Origi 25 to 30 minutes and then even throw on the likes of Trent or throw on the likes of Woodburn and switch it up. And basically, if you're 2 or 3 nil ahead of that point, then just go out in terms of the crowd always chant, attack, attack, attack.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't matter how we win the game. It's a case of we just win the game. You know, you don't get extra points for winning 1-0 or 2-0 or 3-0 or 4-0. But the manner of victory in terms of stamping some kind of marker down is that you score a goal. You score a goal early, whereby they have to come out and try and attack you. You hit them on the counter and go in at halftime 2 or 3 nil ahead.
Yeah.
And then second half, you do exactly what we did against West Ham. You exploit the space and you make use of your chances. In the first 5 minutes of that second half against West Ham, we could have scored 3 goals.
Yeah.
You know, we were that impressive just from the kickoff, and that kind of performance and that kind of sort of not impatience, but that kind of thrust and that pressing ability that we had in that second half is how we should be playing both halves against Middlesbrough. Because you know, I don't buy into the fact that they have nothing to play for. At the end of the day, it's irrelevant what they do. It's all about us. It's our home ground. It's our manor. You know, and as Shankly said, it's a case of they look up at that sign that says this is Anfield and they should be quaking in their boots going into Sunday.
Yeah.
And that's how we need to attack them.
Definitely. Do absolutely love the fact that Man United can't get above top four anymore. 65 points with 36 games played. The most they can possibly get is 71 points. So they can't even get to fifth now. So they're stuck in sixth, aren't they?
Oh, it's the ultimate. It's the ultimate end to the season where we get top four and Ajax do the business
that'll
on
be
Man United. I mean,
yep.
I mean, that would be sort of the perfect end to a, you know, a successful season.
Yeah.
I'd say,
especially given the amount of money.
And many have dismissed Ajax as it being a given result. People forget Ajax have a very good team.
Yeah.
You know, and it all depends in terms of, you know, do I think Man United will win the Europa League? I actually don't care, and I've said this before, I don't care about any rivals. It's irrelevant.
Yeah.
I think all we need to focus on as a team and as a club and as a fan base is that even if they win it, it doesn't make a difference. Our sole objective is to obtain top four on Sunday, and we'll take care of our own business. It doesn't matter. You know, I had some friends that are Man United fans WhatsApp me saying, that, what do you think of our sign of Rodriguez? My response was, I don't give a shit because I genuinely don't care about who they sign. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
You know, they can sign Messi, Neymar and Ronaldo back for all I care. We can't control what other clubs do. We can only control as a fan base what we do, how we approach things, our demeanour, our positivity. And even this evening, people on there saying that, oh, I'm scared about Middlesbrough, I'm scared about this. It's a case of, look, I'm not positive just for positive sake. It's, I have confidence in the team that we have to get the job done. And in doing so, I'm also a realist by saying that the team that we put out on Sunday should blow Middlesbrough away. And that's what should happen. Is it going to happen? We don't know. But are we going to win? I'm confident that we are going to win.
Yeah. Anyone here think that Everton can beat Arsenal away from home?
No chance. No, we're going to rely on...
I think Everton will do what they usually do, and that's bend over and put their arse up and get taken up the arse by the arse.
Jesus Christ. Okay. Anyone think that Watford can beat Man City? Man City are away from home. So they're at Watford.
Are Man City away? No. Man City are
Man
City, home, right?
No, they're away. Watford's at home.
Oh, they're away. Well, that, you know, I wouldn't say no chance to that one. I'd say, you know, there's more chance of that happening than Everton sort of putting up a fight and, you know, causing problems, you know, for Arsenal, because they know that that would secure, you know, our spot.
Yeah.
On a normal day, if Liverpool wasn't involved in the other sort of equation, then I'd say Everton is a very good team away from home, actually.
Yeah.
You know, I'd say Everton-Arsenal, that could easily end up a draw. You know, Lukaku could easily bully. Yeah, if there was something to play for them.
Exactly. If they had to win to obtain Europa League football, I think Everton could go there. And as you mentioned with Lukaku, they could do a job there.
Yeah.
But the fact that they are already kind of in that position whereby they're safe in seventh,
yeah,
and obviously with Arsenal kind of, you know, obviously being in the FA Cup final, no, and obviously Man United already being in Europe for the League Cup as well, it kind of, they have nothing to play for but personal pride. But, you know, I saw a couple of tweets that were on our timeline that said that, and a couple of Everton fans that tagged in our LFC hashtag said, would you be happy to lose on Sunday if it meant Liverpool did not obtain fourth place? and 78 or 79% on someone's account said that I'd be happy to lose. I never want Liverpool to lose.
It's ridiculous, you know, isn't
but
it?
That just shows that,
yeah. It's that ridiculous.
Shows someone's mentality ridiculous, that, yeah. You know, that they would want that, because what they need to remember is that they are trying to aspire to do certain things with their own club. And if they want to aspire to be that way, they need to focus on their own shit and not worry about ours.
Yeah,
but that's typical Everton at sometimes.
Can I throw a really weird scenario past you guys, which would be kind of hilarious? So given that Man City is away to Watford and Arsenal is playing an Everton team which has nothing to play for, given the fact that we're definitely going to beat bloody Middlesbrough, so that's a given. If Man City lose and Arsenal score 5 goals or win by 5 goals against Everton, Man City will drop to 5th, Liverpool will jump to 3rd, and Arsenal will jump to 4th. How funny is that?
Oh, I think it's an interesting scenario, but I think
it's not
the
happen.
Chances of Arsenal beating Everton 5-0, don't get me wrong, they're capable of doing... Arsenal on their day are capable of blowing away every single team bar us in terms of how we've performed this season. I think if Arsenal... a click in and they play well, they could put 3-4 away. And then it's a case of, if Everton are 3-0 down at half-time, how are they going to react second half? They could easily put away another couple of goals. So I wouldn't dismiss them not winning 5-0, but I would dismiss the fact that I think Man City going to Watford, I think Man City will win that game. I don't think there's that much chance of Watford putting up a huge amount of resistance.
Yeah.
So I think that kind
well,
of equation...
Well, it could be. The only thing that comes into my mind is, their manager's basically in trouble. You know, Walter Mazzarri is under great, great pressure. So their final home game, you know, it could be sort of... look at Nish showing us his pussy.
Oh, come on, man.
Oh, Nish. Oh, Nish. You little boy. But, yeah. So basically... Sorry, that sort of distracted me.
Sorry.
Yeah, so Walter... No, it's cool. Walter Mazzarri... in his final game, possibly his final game, fighting for his future. You know, maybe, possibly you could see them running to troops. You know, Man City have always got this performance in them away from home where it just doesn't click for them. We know that.
Yeah.
They have got this performance. They're not as efficient as a sort of a United, dare I say, or a Chelsea. They're not as robust as these teams. They have got this Liverpool in them, I'd go as far as they're saying. Where they sort of, you know, they can sort of buckle away from home. So you never know. With the Everton one, no. But listen, as I said, I want the scenario to be, you know, what time's kickoff, Nad, Sunday?
All kickoffs are meant to be at 3 p.m.
3 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I want, come
quarter past
4.
Everyone plays at the same time.
So come quarter past 4, 4:20, you know, with about half an hour to go, I want us to be 3-0 up and the cop singing and sort of just... everyone enjoying themselves. That's the perfect scenario for me. As Nat says, I don't give a shit what's going on in the other games, as long as we're like 2-3-0 up with 20 minutes to go.
Yeah. How good is it having fate in our own hands?
I think, you know, and I joked about it, you know, earlier in terms of some of the guys in the WhatsApp group being negative about stuff. I think in terms of West Ham, I think it was more, and I'll correct myself, it was more about apprehension about the result. You know, I was very confident and I said to the guys, look, we're going to win and Grizz was kind of saying, but what happens if this? And for me, I didn't want the what would happen scenario. I think in the first 5 minutes against West Ham had a very good chance to score. That could have changed the whole outlook on the whole game. They had a very good shot for a penalty. But something my brother said as well, he said that how often have we had bad luck this season whereby decisions have gone against us? And they have for other teams, but that was a clear penalty that could have happened. And then at 2-1, we become nervous or whatever. And that scenario could easily be flipped on its head. How we reacted to that was such in a positive manner that it meant that not only other factions of the fan base that were going all doom and gloom kind of raised their confidence. It meant that going into this weekend, and a lot of them are going to the game, their confidence and their sort of belief in the team is kind of heightened, which means that they are going to be more feverish in their support. And that can only be a positive thing, because whilst they might project an element of negativity in terms of some of their tweets, if they're at the game and they're positive about how we feel, their voices will be heard by the players. And as Divock Origi alluded to today, and as we've always said, the most important man, apart from the 11 players that are on the pitch, is the 12th man.
Yeah.
And Anfield has always been revered for its atmosphere and everything else. And other rival fans are saying, where's your famous atmosphere? Well, the fact remains that people don't like coming to Anfield because it's such a cauldron of atmosphere that going into Sunday, all we can do is just have that whole stadium jumping and bouncing.
Sure. And people, they are doing the whole bus welcome and everything like that, guys. So get along to it. Make the most of it.
Is that official?
Everything's been arranged and been done. So there's been, and some people are saying that why are we doing this if it's not? I think take the why out of the equation. By doing certain things for the team see that and they feel 10 feet tall going into the tunnel. They think, look at the fans and look how they're reacting.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that it's a European night. It doesn't take away any time that you're spending at the game. It doesn't cost you anything in terms of what you're doing. All it means is that for me, if I was a player and I saw the outside of the coach and I saw fans being so feverish and being so excited to see us, that makes you feel even more confident, sure. In my opinion anyway.
No, definitely. Hey guys, I'm going to have to cut it there. I do have to head off to work in a minute. So any final shout-outs from you guys?
No, my only shout-outs would be to say a couple of things. One is obviously thanks to yourself for inviting us and sorting out the Brian Boys pod too, so to speak.
Pleasure, as always.
And in terms of other shout-outs, not really. I'll just give a shout-out to the whole LFC family in terms of saying that, you know, over the next few days and stuff, I understand and appreciate that people might be apprehensive or be a bit concerned about what may happen, but just keep the faith. You know, I've always been a believer. I think the fan base as a whole just want to... They wanted fourth to happen already, and I totally get that, but the fact remains that had you been offered this opportunity at the start of the season, and for me to say to you, would you want your own destiny in your own hands going into the final game of the season? And I think the vast majority would say yes. So keep that in mind. Stay positive. Stay positive in your support of the team in terms of your messages to players or your messages to various different supporter groups. And if you're attending the game on Sunday, then be loud, be proud, sing your hearts out, and we'll get the win on Sunday and we'll secure top four.
Hell yeah. Grizzy?
Yeah, just... if you want to hear more of my grumpy moans and groans or my blasts, just get onto the Anfield Road Wolves podcast. I'm usually on a Monday and Thursday, eating away and munching away while I do those pods as well. So, get onto that. And apart from that, just want to echo what Nads has said. And thank you very much for having me on, Nish. It's always, always a pleasure to join you, my friend.
Yay.
And obviously, a good, great shout out to the great work you're doing. And best of luck with your projects, my friend. It's been an absolute pleasure to watch you grow slowly. And, you know, may the force be with you. The red force be with you.
Red force. Love it. That's the one. The red mist. It was the red mist.
The red mist, that's it. That's it.
So, appreciate having you boys on. It's always fun, always a good laugh. And if you're listening to this in the podcast, try and check out the YouTube video I've created of this as well. What I've kind of done in the background, which these two boys haven't been able to see, is that I've been scrolling through Twitter feeds and having videos play live, such as Sadio Mane's goals this year and last year, and Firmino, and what people are saying about Sturridge. It's actually quite interesting reading while you're actually listening to the podcast. So why don't you give that a try? Just search for LFC Podcasting Couch on YouTube. I'm trying to take that off, doing a few original things, and there's a bloody guy vacuuming outside my house. So good time to cut off the pod. So thanks a lot, boys. Really appreciate it. This is episode 76, I think, of the LFC Podcasting Couch. My name's Nish, the host. Have a very good day or night, and goodbye. Lovely cushion header.